Welcome to Ben Drury's Voice. I'm Ben. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, decision makers, and leaders in the world of tech. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Jared Sheehan and Johnny Pepin from Capital One. It's great to have you join us today, guys. Thanks for taking the time to do this with us.
Thanks for having us.
Much appreciated. Thanks for having us.
Cool. Oh, it's a pleasure. Now we're going to talk. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about startups and, you know, creating and giving back to the startup community, because I know you guys are heavily involved in that. But I think just to get the ball rolling, I mean, obviously everybody knows what Capital One is. But I mean, just for the aid of the listener, if they're not aware of Capital One, could you just give us a bit of insight into what you provide there at Capital One, and maybe a little bit about your roles there?
Sure. So Capital One is a Fortune 500 fintech in the United States. We started off as a credit card company. We've expanded out to provide auto loans and standard banking services across Capital One. We are very much focused on technology and digital, and we've done a lot of really interesting, creative, and innovative things over the last, really, you know, life of the company, but been very focused on technology. We feel like we are a tech company that, by the way, sells banking products, and you know, how we interact with community and build services, and we've gone all in on the public cloud, I think reflect that.
Mm. Excellent. And so what's your role there, Jared?
So I am the credit card mobile servicing lead for Capital One on the tech side. What that basically means is, for the flagship app for Capital One, I am accountable on the tech side for iOS and the Android features that support your credit card servicing. So if you happen to have a credit card for Capital One and you want to go redeem rewards or pay a balance, or if you want to turn on purchase notifications, for example, so you swipe your card, you get purchase notifications, that kind of stuff. My teams are the ones that deliver those features within the main flagship app. We service about 25 million active customers per month.
Johnny, what's your role at Capital One? What do you do there?
So I'm in the same organization as Jared, with a little bit of a different role. So I'm the engineering lead for our mobile platform teams in the credit card line of business. And so what that means is I have Android, iOS, and some infrastructure and tooling engineers to help build out some of the core capabilities for our mobile apps, so that the other feature teams can then take advantage of those and send features to the customers.
Awesome. So the line of questioning is all about startups and giving back to that community. I'm just interested if you guys have both worked at startups before.
Johnny, I think you have. I certainly have.
I actually co-founded a startup with a friend of mine. I guess it's almost 4 years ago now. They got picked up through the Techstars Accelerator program, went through that process, learned a lot. Clearly, I'm not with that startup anymore, like lots of startup founders. But yeah, it was a great experience.
Jared, you've worked in startups as well.
I have. I've co-founded a few that didn't really get to the Techstars place. Techstars is an outstanding organization. I've actually read the book that you know, kind of a lot of the stuff that they do was based on. I'm a little bit jealous of Johnny going through the whole program. Oh, there nice. It is. John, you can't see it on the podcast, but Johnny held the book up. So
I have to plug the book, because it's a great book. Do More Faster.
Yep. Yeah. Excellent.
I've worked at startups previous to Capital One. I actually led engineering at a startup building contextually aware mobile applications around driving, which were super interesting. The idea basically was you took sensors, piped them into algorithms, and then you could spit out events that would tell you how you were driving.
Wow.
And that was really, really fun. And not a lot of mobile companies are doing much with sensors. That was, like I said, a lot of fun, learned a lot. Joined Capital One about 5 years ago and been here ever since. But along the way, I've been on several advisory boards for startups. I'm very interested in the startup ecosystem, and helping them kind of bring products to market and, you know, kind of push through the goo that gets in the way. So it's very interesting.
Awesome. I mean, startups do so much for the economy. Like, I've written some notes down here. They drive the economic force, increase employment, they have direct local impact, advanced technology and open up new markets. I mean, they're so important in society. I mean, how important would you say it is to give back to that tech community and support the startup ecosystem?
It's really, really, really focused and important. What startups do and supporting their mission to change the world is how innovation really happens. Innovation happens also within big companies as well, but it's not necessarily their main focus all the time. I think we have a fairly robust innovation process within kind of Johnny and I's organization. But historically with big companies and even medium-sized companies, you get a little bit lost in the forest of trying to deliver products versus innovate and disrupt. And that's really the energy that I think that startups bring to economies and ecosystems and can really like disrupt industries. There's so much cool stuff going on out there between, I was just reading about this process called fermentation, which is supposed to take over kind of the, how we actually get food. And it's just fascinating how a lot of these things work. And that's not even in the technology industry, which is where I am.
One of the things that I love about the startup ecosystem that we don't nearly see as much at large corporations. So Capital One is definitely an innovative place to work. But we are still bound by the fact that we're a large organization. We have lots of customers. We service 25 to 30 million customers daily. Startups don't have that problem, right? And so they're able to sort of live by the fail fast mentality. Throw something out there. If it works, awesome. If it doesn't, we'll pivot and try something else. And I think that's a pretty cool ecosystem.
Yeah, I'm just interested in the Capital One kind of, because obviously it's a huge, huge, huge global company. So in opposed to startups, then how easy is it to make big changes in such a big organization? Because obviously with startups, you're just saying it's so much easier. How much like red tape is there in such a big organization?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of big organizations will say that you can really disrupt and innovate within a company, and not to give a big pitch for Capital One, but Capital One actually does it. A lot of the things that Johnny and I are very passionate about, community, for example, which I'm sure we'll get to, actually is why I'm here at Capital One. I go to lots of conferences and I go to a lot of meetups, and there would be really smart, intelligent folks from Capital One there giving talks, and they hosted conferences, and I'd show up, and they would have kind of the top level kind of content and exercises and speakers. And when I decided to look for a new position, the manager I talked to was like, I said, hey, tell me about your community. He's like, well, what do you want to do? Let's do it. And here we are, and we'll get to that part of the journey. But Capital One is very supportive of the things that I think are important around community, which Johnny thinks are important. And we have a fairly robust support system for startups as well. And I can talk a little bit about that if you'd like.
We also have, I wanted to mention sort of to piggyback on what Jared said, internal organizations that inherently enable that. Like kind of like a startup inside a company. Capital One Labs is an internal organization specifically designed to just R&D, innovate, come up with cool ideas. If an engineer has a neat idea, they can pitch it to labs, work with them to develop that idea. And even outside of labs, we're all empowered to sort of suggest and work on any innovative ideas we have. I mean, more recently, we have projects going on around Kotlin multi-platform, around Flutter. We're all in on AWS as far as cloud services as a company, which is unique to the banking industry. So there's lots of really cool things that even though we're a large corporation, we've been able to do similar to you'd see in more of a startup environment.
Yeah. And I'd add too, just recently, we started integrating with Google App Actions, and that was driven based off of really an engineer meeting the App Actions team at Google I.O. in 2019 and just basically like saying, hey, we should do this. And we're like, we should do this. And then we did. So there's a lot of goodness that we enable our folks to do. We could do better. You could always do better. But I think that there is red tape. We are fintech. We are highly regulated. However, the amount of movement we're able to affect and change, that we're allowed to do, I think is really empowering.
It's always so important to constantly be looking forward and trying to stay ahead of the curve, no matter how big or small the company is. I mean, it's so good to see that with Capital One, you can still, you're still progressing and pushing for the next thing, the next movement. It's amazing to see. In terms of the startup community, what's your journey through that and giving back and also trying to grow that?
You know, I think that I will always have a startup innovative kind of culture to me, or at least a couple of bones in my body. I really, really enjoy the large organizations. I actually like the, you know, kind of corporate culture and the challenges there for large scale organizations. In fact, one of the things Capital One is trying to do is scale mobile development. And that is hard for a myriad of reasons. And in kind of our opinion is no fintech has ever done it, and we're going to do it, and we're already doing it. And we're on really an interesting journey to get there. And part of that is breaking through bonds. But me personally, there's nothing like getting in the weeds with a founder or, you know, a CEO or CTO to solve a hard problem and get to market and, you know, help sell it to someone, right? Like how often do I have to go on a sales call? You know, I'm a technologist, like I don't get to do that much. And, you know, part of, again, our my connections with the community helped me do that. So, you know, there's a couple of companies I've worked with lately. There's one called New Urbana, which is really interesting. It's like a co-innovation studio. Look that one up. And then there's one called AR Inspect, where they're really disrupting kind of the inspection space. And as you know, we're in Northern Virginia, right around kind of the DC area. You know, there's a lot of government work here, and inspections are like literally drawn on paper when people, you know, go to inspect places. So bringing them into the 20th century is going to be really interesting.
So we've been talking a little bit before this recording, and you run 8 meetups in the DC area, including 3 separate conferences. And could you tell us a little bit about these, how they work, kind of what's the aim, and what do they involve?
Sure. So my journey through, you know, kind of one of the, you know, the way that I learned to be an engineer, what I would call a good engineer. I hope my managers thought I was a good engineer, but I felt like I was a good engineer by learning from other people that were passionate about the things they worked on. So passionate, in fact, that they would actually go and talk about it after working 8 to 10 hours a day at a meetup or at a conference, right? And I wanted to be with and around those people. So I would go and show up and I would listen. And let me tell you, it was like the battle scars they went through, the challenges they overcame, and how they did it. And it may or may not have been the perfect way to do it or the right way to do it, whatever that answer is. But it really imprinted on me a kind of a work ethic, if you want to put it that way, where I really strove to be like them. So, you know, I would go watch lots of YouTube videos that would show me point by point, you know, do this and do this and do this. And I've actually been in the Android space for over 10 years. And, you know, Android is about 12 years old, 11 years old, something like that. And so I kind of got in the beginning, and it was very kind of shoestring. This worked or this didn't work. And so that's really how I learned. And that's, I guess, part of why I eventually got, you know, when I kind of got to a position and a time frame in my life where I could do it, was like, I'm going to go and found some meetups. I'm going to go run some meetups. I'm going to give back, and I'm going to learn along the way. So instead of necessarily me spending hours and hours and hours watching YouTube videos, now I help encourage folks to make their own YouTube videos at meetups and go with them along on the journey and provide that space. And so that's one of the reasons that it feels very good to me about kind of what we're trying to do. And that is our give back. Johnny, do you want to go into kind of some of the specifics on kind of the meetups and why we do them and how we do them?
Yeah, I can. Just to go back on one of the reasons why it's important for me is because I agree with Jared. I think there's a lot of value in learning from other people's experiences. And if you look at the spectrum of individuals or the types of individuals that participate in our meetups and in our conferences, you have folks who have been in the industry for decades, PhDs and whatever, all the way to folks who are self-taught or they went through a coding boot camp and they're looking for that first gig, and everybody in between. And so it's a really diverse community from that perspective. And then also in terms of like the tech community, and this, I'm not saying anything new here, it's constantly changing. And so if you're going to be successful, you have to stay on top of whatever the latest change is. If you're a JavaScript engineer, there's probably a new library coming out next week that you need to learn about because your company is going to want to use that, right? For Android, even and iOS. We've made the shift from Java to Kotlin, the shift from Objective-C to Swift. Now we're all going towards composable declarative UIs, right? And so that's a completely different way to build apps. And so if you don't stay on top of those changes, you're going to fall behind. And most companies are just expecting you to know these things. And so how do you learn about it? You can watch YouTube videos like Jared talked about. You can read a book if those still exist. Or you can go to meetups and you can learn from people who are also learning this and sort of learn from their experiences. And so that's for me anyway, is an important component of this. We do it. It's really about building the community of like-minded people. So there are 8 meetups, mostly in the DC area right now. And we started those, and I'll give full credit. Jared actually pulled me into this early on. Jared started a lot of this as far as being part of the Google developer group here in DC, and then our DC Android meetup group, and then expanding that. We built out DC Kotlin, DC iOS, DC Flutter, Cloud DC. I'm probably missing a couple others, but really just starting small and organic and building on top of that community to the point that now we have sort of a conglomerate of groups all under the umbrella of Dev Community, which we're calling devcommunity.org is our website that sort of aggregates all those. And we have plans of future worldwide domination, which I think is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, future world community bring togetherness, I think is what he means.
Yeah, maybe not domination. We can cut out domination.
But yeah, the I think the big step here is we realized that 8 meetup groups on 8 different sites and 8 different kind of like cadences are a bit hard to manage. We love our meetup partners. And so one of the things that we've done is, you know, you mentioned we created devcommunity.org to kind of aggregate it together into one stop shop. So it links out to all of our YouTube videos. We record all our videos now and we get them up literally like days later. It's crazy. And we've got a newsletter you can sign up for. We've been sending out a newsletter for, I don't know, almost 2 years now on a monthly cadence, but like we have to go to each of those 8 meetups and like kind of figure out which part is appropriate to each one and send it out. Now we'll kind of send it in one place and kind of manage it appropriately. And then you mentioned the 3 conferences that were a part of DevFest DC, Android Summit, which was last Thursday and Friday, which was outstanding. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then iOS DevCamp DC, which will be on October 30th, so literally 2 weeks from today. But like it's a single one-stop shop for anyone who's interested to go to and take a look at. And our goal, I think, in the next probably 12 months is to, we are focused kind of on the DC area at the moment, but especially with the worldwide pandemic situation, we had to pivot to a virtual environment. And how do we actually do that and, you know, bring this community together? And so we're going to continue to get even better at the virtual events. We'll have, eventually when the world opens again, we'll probably still have some kind of, if you want to call them on-prem events, and we will still probably figure out how to live stream them and or keep uploading them to YouTube. So we basically did that with Android Summit this year. We've been a standard conference and we pivoted over to fully virtual and it went almost flawlessly. Like, holy cow. I mean, we can always improve on a few things. But you know, all the tech worked, all the speakers showed up, and everyone seemed generally happy. So we were very excited about that.
Yeah, we got a lot of great feedback from that. And in our current situation, we're all stuck at home or wherever we're at. It probably wouldn't make sense for us to hold a large conference where we bring in like hundreds of people from around the world. So we're forced to do this virtually, but it's actually, if we look at the pro side, been a really great thing because we've been able to reach folks from all around the world. We had our speakers at Android Summit last week, for instance. We had 39 speakers speaking live from 11 different countries. And we wouldn't have been able to do that. So there are definitely some pros to the virtual environment that have kind of happened naturally and wouldn't have happened had we not been forced to do it this way.
How much have you learned then? Let's start with how long have you been running these meetups for?
All right. So at least for me, I have been part of the Google developer groups pretty much since it was founded here in DC, but I was not an organizer. I was an attendee. I was a member. And actually the original founder, his name is Cheetah. I love Cheetah. He's our homie. Shout out to Cheetah. Love him. So he is a serial meetup entrepreneur, kind of like Johnny and I, where he is all about community. So he was the original founder of the Northern Virginia Java user group, along with the Google developer group here in DC. And so that's 9 or 10 years he's been doing this. I actually moved away to the Bay Area for a couple of years and came back and, I think it was 2014 to the DC area. And, right away I pulled up with Cheetah and he and I kind of started game planning, kind of community. I was ready to really dive all in. And so that I started off joining, with the Google developer group around that time. And then that's when we founded DC Android. And then quickly after that was the Kotlin group, the Flutter group and several other groups. And we've since grown to, like I said, there's about 8 meetup groups. We're about 10,000 members in aggregate. So about 5 or 6 years we've been at this. And I think we went from probably 5 or 6 or 7 meetups a week a year in probably 2015 to Johnny, what are we on pace for? 35 or 40 now in about a single 40. Year. Yeah. Yeah. And all of those will be on YouTube. Right. And so it's been a journey where we've decided, hey, let's, Kotlin is a really cool thing, and it's not just for Android. So let's create its own user group and like get Kotlin enthusiasts going. Flutter is a cross-platform framework that might actually work. This is coming from a native like mobile developer. Like seriously, if you asked me this 2 years ago, I probably would have totally said there's no one out there that's really good.
Yeah.
So we created a meetup group for that. And so now we're kind of at size and kind of scale where we need to create kind of a single entry for everyone to go in and find what it is that they want to do. Which events do you want to attend? Do you want to be a speaker? We have an easy way to say, hey, look, you want to be a speaker at any of our events. We don't care. We're in just like, here's a quick and easy way to send us an email and do it. So it's very fulfilling and inspiring, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested in, what's the main thing you've learned since you started doing this? Would you say have you learned more about the community or have you learned more about the tech or that side of things?
I'd say actually community. I mean, I learn about the tech as we go. Mm. But the way I try to operate at meetups is I walk into a meetup, whether it's my meetup or somebody else's meetup. And I try to find someone I don't know and I go and sit next to that person. And, I kind of get to know them a little bit and that helps me figure out who in the community is doing what. And then I learn from them while I learn the content. And that's really kind of the juice for me, getting to know new people and learning things about their journey and sharing some of mine maybe. And, we end up with a commonality. That's really what I think the core of what a meetup is. It's like, the technology changes, but we're all interested in learning about this and how do we help each other in the community? And that leads to, if someone is struggling with, a position that they're at and, they want some advice, like I can help them with some advice, or I might need some advice. I've met some people who have done some really amazing things and I just kind of asked them, hey, I'm struggling with this part of my career. Like, can you help me out? Like, what do you suggest? And I've gotten just outstanding advice from some of the people that I met in the community, and they've done just some amazing things. Johnny, what do you?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, but so meetups and conferences, really people go for two reasons. The first is the tech side of the house. They want to listen to the talks. They want to learn about new things. And we can solve that virtually, right? We can live stream a YouTube video of someone giving a presentation. So from a tech point of view, virtual meetups and conferences, totally doable. The thing that's more difficult is what Jared touched on really. And it's the other reason people go to these things. And it's the community and networking, right? Meeting other people that are in your situation, learning from them in a more personal way, just having those ad hoc conversations with folks about whatever's on your mind. You lose a lot of that in the virtual environment. And so I think that's the hard problem that not only us, but lots of folks are trying to solve right now, which is when we go back to some semblance of normal, if we decide to maintain this virtual capability, how are we going to solve that half of it? And I don't think anybody has a good answer yet. And the answer is probably going to be something like Jared said, where it's a mix, right? So we offer both.
Excellent. So we've been talking about where you guys get inspiration from? And you mentioned YouTube. Obviously, talking to people is a huge one. Where else do you look for inspiration? Do you read books or podcasts, or where do you go?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, I'm sure Johnny too. You know, we burn the candle at both ends sometimes a little too much. For me, you know, there's inspiration and learning, and there's also kind of you have to take some time for yourself and relax. So I'm an avid cardio person. I've been biking and running this year a lot. In fact, one of my really good friends has browbeat me. I mean, offered for, and suggested that I try to do my first marathon this year. And so, thanks, Alex. Love you, man. So I have agreed to do it. However, I may or may not do it on the day we had planned. But that's actually to answer your question. When I go run and I go bike long distances, I will download a podcast. I will download an Audible book, and I will listen. Some of them are family related. I have two very precocious young daughters. So I'm learning about, you know, daughters and how they grow up in my current book. And I've also gone through other books like, you know, there's a book by Marty Kagan called Inspired. Highly recommend everyone read that one. Kim Scott's Radical Candor. And the one I just finished was actually Bob Iger, who was the CEO of Disney, The Ride of a Lifetime. Those three are just outstanding. And I highly recommend them to anybody who's in kind of our industry. So I learn a lot that way. And it helps me from a, you know, day-to-day job perspective as well. So I learn from meetups. I learn from books. I learn from podcasts. You know, I'm doing a podcast right now, for example. And, you know, trying to get back a little bit and share some of my journey, and hopefully, you know, I can learn from others and, you know, hey, what do you do to get better and be a better person? So, you know, the relaxing part is kind of my running, my biking. The learning part also is family related as well. Also kind of career development along the way.
Awesome. Johnny, where'd you get inspiration from? Where'd you gather that?
So similar. I actually have sort of a list of podcasts that I like to listen to as well on the tech side, but, I come from academia, so I read a lot. I get my inspiration from reading technical blog posts, websites, things like that. To be honest, my best learning mechanism is just doing. And so sometimes I'll see a YouTube video or hear someone talk about a new thing. And so I'll say, I'll just go build something using that thing and I'll learn about it. And so for me, I get an inspiration from the high that comes from just building a new thing, like teaching myself how to do something new. And I'm a technophile like a lot of us. So like just being able to tinker with things and make something work, even if it's totally useless, is a ton of fun. And I think that's inspiring to me. And then also, you know, I have kids like Jared. And so trying to impart some of that knowledge on them is always inspiring too. Of course, they're getting a little older now, mine aren't. So much to my chagrin, they're not as interested in computer science as I am. So that's okay, because I want them to be inspired to be lifelong learners as well. So that's where I get a lot of my inspiration from.
We may need to talk to their dad about that. We may need to talk to their dad about that. So.
Yeah. I don't run as much as Jared now, which is nothing I'm ashamed of, to be honest. But I do like to get out and exercise and stuff. And I do think there's value in sort of de-stressing a little bit, because we work a lot, and then we have all these other things that we're super interested in that take up a lot of our time too. So you have to have some outlet.
In the long term, what do you want to see, and what's the end goal for creating this supportive community for the startups industry?
I mean, I guess the end goal would be to, you know, grow community and ensure there's a support system for all of the engineers that are out there and, you know, trying to struggle through learning about various different platforms and ecosystems, right? You know, you always want to have someone you can reach out to. There's only so much you can read from Stack Overflow. And I know that's kind of our go-to, but, you know, I think that when communities are strong, then you're much more likely to succeed. And, you know, I just, good things happen when you build communities, and there's a lot of tangential evidence of that. And you know, I think that that's kind of the end goal for me. The end goal for me is always like seeing people succeed, I guess, is kind of the actual answer I have. You know, seeing people come in who are fledgling developers and grow into you know, whatever it is that they want to be, that's actually the biggest success for me. And I actually have a bunch of examples off the top of my head of people I can name. I won't do it now, but I've seen that in a lot of my journey over the last 5 years, and it's very, very fulfilling. And I know that I can reach out to them if I have a problem, right? And I do regularly. So, you know, it opens doors and to everyone's career, and, you know, hopefully we can continue to expand in a supportive and diverse way.
So helping people succeed and seeing people succeed for me is probably one of the top goals. And I think for me, it helps us succeed in one of the problems that we have in the tech industry right now as well, which is Jared touched on it, diversity. Just providing a pathway for folks of historically underrepresented groups to a successful career in tech through building the networking community that comes from meetups and conferences and stuff, I think is a really great win, because we can give them that platform, right? If someone wants to speak and they have a decent topic, and sometimes even if we don't, we'll give them the opportunity, like, hey, sure, get up in front, you know, speak in front of these folks, make a name for yourself, get a little bit of experience and exposure. I think all those things, it's all part of the umbrella of helping people to succeed, but there's so much more that can come from that, I think.
Excellent. Is there anything that concerns you about the industry? Is there anything that stands out?
Yeah, so I mentioned diversity. For me, that's a big one. Across lots of different spectrums, there's a diversity problem that I can think of. And for me, it's this is a struggle that startups have more so than larger companies, but it's like always staying ahead of the latest thing. It's doable. It's a lot of work, but it can wear on you. So for the individuals, especially individuals who are maybe earlier in their career or trying to make it to be successful, it can be very stressful. And so there can be a toll on, I guess you could say, mental health and personal life. So to me, that's always a challenge in the tech industry, just the constant competition, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I'll echo that too. I mean, diversity is certainly one of the largest challenges we have. And, you know, you want to be you want to promote ways for anyone to join at least tech. You know, we're talking about tech, we're on the tech side, but I would argue that we want a diverse set of individuals to be able to do anything, but definitely in tech, where there's definitely a lacking. And in fact, you know, for example, Android Summit, we do charge a fee to get in, but none of that money goes to anyone on this call. It doesn't go to Capital One, doesn't go to Giant, doesn't go to me. It actually goes directly to the Women Who Code charity. And it supports our Women Who Code partners. And this year we actually raised more money for Women Who Code than we ever have in the past. And that is very, very fulfilling. And we worked really closely with the Women Who Code and the Women Who Code mobile group specifically, because, you know, we're Android's mobile. We're able to provide many free tickets to individuals within that community to come to Android Summit and get to learn. And some of them even got some shout outs during the event. So, you know, helping communities like that grow and really help educate individuals. And one of the great things about Women Who Code is, not only are they just a supportive group, but they actually organize their meetups. They have meetups, but they also have focused learning activities. And Capital One we actually hosted and sponsored some of these last year when we were allowed to have people show up. But, you know, we had an iOS and an Android kind of 101 boot camp for a day for Android and iOS. At our headquarters building, we had over 100 attendees, and it was great. But like, Women Who Code does that all the time, not just with Capital One. And, you know, I saw a tweet the other day that was just kind of astounding. There was someone who said that they had been homeless 5 years ago. 4 years ago, they moved into someone's bedroom. And then like 2 years ago, they bought a car. And a year ago, they bought a house. And it all came from learning to code. And I don't know if they went to meetups. I don't know anything else about it, but I saw that and that was very profound to me. We want people to be able to contribute to society. And a good way you can do that is, you know, to support yourself and contribute to society is to have a skill that is in high demand, and software development is one of the more in demand things. And I think anyone could do it. You just have to try and have the energy and be encouraged and inspired.
I mean, what are some of the overlooked struggles of the industry, and how do you think they can be overcome?
I think one of the struggles is probably security. You know, just kind of a bit of a piece of it's a sliver, but if you think about it, it should be a first-class citizen. As a fintech, we take it very, very seriously. You know, and you look at, we talked about startups and we talk about, you know, kind of learning, and very rarely are you learning how to build an application, get a feature out, and then hope you have customers and hope you can figure out how to monetize that versus like, hey, make sure it's hardened and like your data is not leaking and hackers can't in and do nefarious things. And it's a lot of times it's an afterthought. And that is just across the world and with software engineering and tech and digital and, you know, all the buzzwords, cloud being turning into first class citizens in all of our daily lives. And it's just, and it's going to continue this direction. Security is something that gets overlooked significantly, and making sure that your customers are protected throughout the industry. I think Capital One does a pretty good job of it. We can get better, obviously. But it's definitely a concern to me. Especially when I talk to startups and I say, hey, are you obfuscating your code? Oh no, should we do that? Yeah, it's literally one line in your Gradle file. It's not that hard. You know, and then they go do it and, you know, things are better. Now it's not where you should stop. But anyway, I think it's definitely one of those things that needs to be treated as a first class citizen, and it isn't necessarily.
Yeah, one of the other sort of additional things. So it's part of security, but it's another type, right? So the security Jared's talking about is from a developer perspective in terms of let's build this piece of software in a way that ensures it doesn't get used for nefarious purposes or that people don't use it to then take advantage of other people. The other part of that too is privacy to a smaller extent, well, maybe to a larger extent, actually. I think one of the struggles that we have in the tech industry, especially in the startup industry, is the question of can we do it versus should we do it? We can do lots of cool things and people have lots of great ideas. And I think they sometimes get so enamored by the fact that, hey, we could do this if we sort of set our minds to it, that the question of should we do it sometimes doesn't get asked. And we've seen that a lot of times in the privacy space where it's like, we could harvest all this information fairly easily without people even knowing about it. And then we could use all that for all these great purposes, right? You think of lots of reasons why we'd need data like that. And the question is, but should we? And I think those are the struggles that a lot of tech companies are going through right now. So definitely security, like Jared talked about. And for me, I think privacy and then the follow-on question of can versus should are just, I think they're going to be ongoing struggles.
Yeah, the moral dilemma is not going to go away.
Yeah.
Like that is, with great powers comes great responsibility. And the problem, of course, is like, who's the moral authority, right? And I think you have to default to the actual user of the data, the owner of the data.
Yep.
But then again, what's the definition of who owns your data, right? If I walk down the street outside of my house and you're taking pictures, do I actually own that picture of me or not? I mean, there are people who say yes, there are people who say no. And I don't know if there's a right answer. It's hard. It's a hard problem. Yep. But, you know, we didn't really have this problem however many years ago.
I'm really interested in you guys now. So, you know, throughout your career, what's the cheapest investment that you've made that's provided with the highest return on investment in your career? That's a tough question.
Wow. Somebody's interested in what we have to say. He said, we're interested in you guys. Wow, that's first. No, I'm kidding.
Let's see, the cheapest investment. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I thought about this in advance, and I honestly couldn't come up with a thing because to me, my biggest investment is time.
Yeah.
Which you can't really, I guess you could put a dollar value on it, but if we had to pick something that actually paid for, I honestly, the thing for me, so 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago now, when I got involved or started getting involved with Android development and I wanted to ship my first app, I had to buy that $25 Google developer, license. And 10 years ago I paid it and I've never paid it since. And that has driven me to do lots of great things, right? So I think just that taking the leap to buy the developer license and publish something as a first thing sort of set the stage for follow-on things. So to me, maybe that was a good investment.
This was also a hard one for me. You know, I think time is actually my most valuable commodity. Lots of reasons, you know, how much time you spend with your kids, your family, your work, you know, your community, et cetera. And so like, that's an easy one, but I feel like it's a bit of a cop out. So one of the things that I did was, you know, kind of went back into my life. And I actually think one of the most valuable things I ever did was kind of right before I got into Android. So maybe, you know, 11 years ago, 12 years ago or something. I was a fledgling Java developer, and I, you know, was kind of learning along the way. And, you know, I kind of, you know, learned YouTube was kind of around, not really yet, but I was kind of learning as I worked. And I decided to get the Sun Certified Java Developer certification. And it's just basically a Java cert. And I paid for some training material, and I don't remember how much it was, you know, but it might've been $50, $25, something like that. But then what I did is I spent the next 4 weekends, I went into work so I wouldn't be distracted, and we weren't working on weekends. We didn't need to at this particular company, but like I sat at my desk and I spent 4 weekends in a row, Saturdays, Sundays, and then, you know, a lot of times after work for 4 weeks. And then I went and took the test, and it ended up being free because my company paid for it as long as I passed, but I passed. By the way, just by, you know, the hair of my chinny chin chin, but I passed. And but like learning, but learning to write code based on how Sun Microsystems wanted you, now it's Oracle, wanted you to actually write Java code from a developer perspective and what all the things were for. Man, I'll tell you the difference it made in the before and after on how I could execute my job was just astonishing.
Wow.
So my effectiveness went up, and that actually probably was the catalyst for my, I'm going to learn how to do, how to build things in a way that they were supposed to be designed. And then eventually that, you know, once you kind of learn the way they tell you to do it, you form your own opinions, and they're based in experience and fact, and you get, you know, you end up really doing well in your industry. And so that beget things like YouTube videos and whatnot. And I haven't got a lot of certs since then, but I don't really need to, because I figured out how to learn on my own and be able to execute in the ways that, you know, others were doing through kind of observing them and listening to what they had to say and deciding if I thought that was the right answer or not. And it really helped me prepare. I actually think the key to life is being prepared, and especially in industry. If you know there's a certain topic that you feel passionate about and there's a meeting about it, and you spend an hour beforehand researching the topic and you show up, A, your opinion might actually change to the right answer, which someone else might know, or you'll have data ground to ground your actual topic. And so that has actually served me very, very well in my career, especially when it's something I, you know, I know that we're all in, none of us want to go to meetings, but decisions are made in meetings. If you want to be effective, be prepared.
Absolutely. Great advice. Now, we've been talking like for the past, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes, and it really has occurred to me how much you guys do. You must be so busy. So where do you find the time? Do you have to get up at 4 a.m. and have two really strong coffees, or where do you find the time to fit all this in?
Well, having to commute right now buys me an extra hour and a half or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me, because the answer is I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
So I don't have a good answer, because it's not like I find the time. I just keep doing, like, I keep using the time that I have, and then I go to bed, you get up in the morning, and you just keep doing that, you know? I guess I don't think about it too much. Every once in a while, my family will remind me, like, hey, we should hang out sometime.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a lot better at that, to be honest, over the years. But yeah, I don't have an answer, because I think that's a constant struggle.
Yeah. I'd say a couple of things for me is, I try to be really efficient. So with my workday, I don't really turn off during my workday, even in my downtime. I figure out how to write emails or send Slacks. I am very much a kind of key combination person, flip-flopping between tabs and windows, and really, really quickly. There's very little wasted time. So like I said, I probably get more done in a single day than I've ever done ever you know, and I don't know where I would, you know, rank on that for other people, but I feel like I get a lot more done. And I kind of think two or three or four moves ahead while I'm doing a thing, make sure I'm ready for the next thing, whatever those are. So from a work perspective and a community setup perspective, and, you know, I can get eight, you know, newsletters out to eight different meetup groups fairly quickly. Also, I will say that, you know, the meetup perspective, of course, is we have an outstanding team that helps us. Johnny and I don't do this all ourselves. We have 15, 20 really core folks that really help us, help push these out the door. And I name them all, but we'd be here for another 40 minutes. But like it's not just Johnny and I. Like we might be, you know, kind of catalysts for a lot of this, but we can't do it without the outstanding team that we have all across the board. So we kind of corral some of the ideas and bring them together. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone kind of drives their own piece, and we're very much bottom-up leaders. Like if you think that's the right answer, we might have some, you know, kind of targeted questions, but run with it. It's fine. You know, I also think that's part of community. I think that's a valuable part of leadership. The other piece I'd say too is, you know, I talked about running and biking, like I have to have downtime. If I don't have downtime, then stress levels go up. And so I do very focused downtime. During the summer when my kids weren't in remote school, I blocked off the entire lunch hour. We'd eat and we'd go for a bike ride every single day. So I got time with the kids outside, you know, sometimes we'd go bike rides, but we'd, you know, play ball in the yard or something. And then after work, I tend to, you know, kind of turn off and walk away from my keyboard. And for my team, Google has this nice, you know, thing where you send an email that will deliver the next morning. So sometimes I do have to do some work a little bit after hours. Well, I always use, like almost always use the send later function so they don't feel like they have to respond or email. The other thing is I'm always thinking in my head about my next, like I mentioned that my next step, but even during the weekend when I'm out hanging out with family or going to the grocery store or whatever it is we're doing, I'm thinking of family things, but I'm also thinking about my next step when it comes to things like, hey, Android Summit's coming up. I have these five things to do. I should get prepared for one and two. And so then when one or two are ready to go, I actually sit down. I might be at my computer for 10 minutes instead of 30 minutes. So again, efficiency is kind of the name of the game for me and trying to make sure that I think things through. And then when I actually need to be focused on them, I'm focused, but then I'm done.
Is there anything you wish you were told when you started your career that you've had to go on and learn the hard way?
I guess for me, when I got out of school, I was still kind of in school mode. You know, I'm one of those college kids that went to college for, you know, to have fun and kind of learn second. When I got to the real world, it was really different. So I'm sure my parents told me that the real world is different than, you know, kind of growing up college world, but it took me a little while to kind of learn it and really understand it and agree with it. So, you know, I had a few bumps along the way, let me put it that way. And, you know, but I think that once I got to the point where I figured out that engineering could be fun and I should be all in on it. And I, you know, I can build my own community. I figured out my way. And so I think probably the advice I would have said is be yourself, find your way, find the culture and the community that you want to be part of. And it doesn't have to be a meetup, it can be anything, right? If you like knitting, figure out how to be part of a knitting community, right? It's fine. Just figure out how to be part of a community, figure out how to do what you love for your job. And, you know, they say you'll never work again. I don't feel like I work. Like I really don't.
For me, what I wish I was told. So I have a different, we didn't really talk about our backgrounds too much, but my path to the software engineering community and career field is a little different than the traditional path. And so I didn't have some of the same sort of traditional struggles that folks have where you graduate high school, you go to college, you graduate college, you start a career, and then you sort of learn to grow as a professional in that route. So I had a different path where I graduated high school, I joined the military, and then that was my career for the next 20 years. And then my final career sort of prior to coming to Capital One, I was in academia. So I was a computer science professor for about 4 years. So a very different experience than a traditional software engineer career path. But one of the things that made that difficult after transitioning to the to this career field on the private side was when you're in those other communities, whether it's government or academia, a lot of the things that you're doing, you don't have to rely on sort of promoting yourself to get things done, right? There's an sort of implicit knowledge that you're doing something towards like whatever your mission is or whatever your goal is. And everybody just sort of understands that. And one of the struggles that I still have actually, and Jared can tell you about this because we've talked about it, which is you really need to be your biggest advocate, right? There are lots of fish in the sea out there. And so if you want to be successful, you need to be your biggest cheerleader and you need to be your biggest advocate. Because otherwise you're just going to sort of get lost in the mix of everybody else. So I wish I'd have been told that, you know, 5-10 years ago, but it's something I've learned, but it's still a struggle for me. So
I'd add on there, make sure your manager is your advocate too, right? Your manager needs to advocate for you. All you managers who are listening, support your people, enable them. And then when they do good stuff, go brag about them, because your person's not really supposed to brag about themselves, but go and brag about them. We have a Android Summit just happened, and I have basically a doc which I titled brag email, but I'm bragging about other people, right? And it's going to be sent out at some point. But like, it's promote the people that worked hard and promote the impact that they have had and the enablement that you enabling them provided allowed them to do great work. And so, yes, you are your own brand ambassador. Get your manager on board with being that supported brand ambassador too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible advice. That's so inspiring. And you run so many meetup events. Is there any particular place or where would you go to if we can have a run of the websites and what they are?
Sure, absolutely. We've got kind of the main one would be devcommunity.org. That's the main aggregate site. You can go in, you can sign up for our newsletters. They're sent out monthly. Every time we have a conference coming up, there will be information there, and we've got YouTube videos and whatnot. So definitely go to devcommunity.org. If you're a Flutter fan, we built it with Flutter Web, by the way. Pretty cool stuff. Thank you, Jared Alexander. We have a couple of other kind of standalone websites. So AndroidSummit.org, pretty straightforward. That was our conference two days last week. iOSDevCampDC.org, I believe as well. That is coming up in 2 weeks from today. So it'll be October 30th. That'll be an iOS focused conference, and then DevFest DC every year, devfestdc.org as well. That's a Google developer group conference, which I believe is one of the largest in the world and has been for the last 3 years. So
perfect. Is there any final thoughts that you want to share whilst we've got you here?
Just Ben, I really appreciate you taking the time. You and your company, I'm totally going to mess up the name, Venturi Voice Podcast. So I really appreciate you reaching out to us and promoting, community and, kind of how people can get involved with community. I highly recommend anyone. We're also on LinkedIn, Johnny and Jared or I, if you want to connect with us directly, open to talking with anyone. My motto, and Johnny will tell you this, is I make time for people. At some point, I'm not going to be able to make time for everybody, but currently I can, and I'm sure Johnny would make some time for folks too. If you have questions about career and which way to go and how to study and how to learn and what you like, how to get involved, just, let us know. There's lots of ways to find us. And, again, Ben, really appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Well, thank you guys too. I'm sure you're incredibly busy, so it must have been difficult to carve out this hour to do this. So thank you so much. I could literally chat to you all day.
Well, thank you so much. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.